My yar! He flailed the hawk madly against the wall until it let go of his nose. Strictly speaking, Hodges Arg wasn't his real name. On the other hand, on the basis that someone's real name is the name they introduce themselves to you by, he was definitely Hodges Arg. This was because the hawks and falcons in the castle mews were all Lancre birds, and therefore naturally possessed of a certain sordu independence of mind. After much patient breeding and training, Hodges Arg had managed to get them to let go of someone's wrist, and now he was working on stopping them viciously attacking the person who had just been holding them, i.e., invariably, Hodges Arg. He was nevertheless a remarkably optimistic and good-natured man who lived for the day when his hawks would be the finest in the world. The hawks lived for the day when they could eat his other ear. "I can see you're doing very well," said Magrat. "You don't think, do you, that they might respond better to cruelty?"
"Oh, no, miss," said Hodges Arg. "You have to be kind. You have to build up a bond, you see. If they don't trust you, they—"
"I'll just leave you to get on with it, then, shall I?" said Magrat, as feathers filled the air. Magrat had been gloomily unsurprised to learn that there was a precise class and gender distinction in falconry. Verence, being king, was allowed a gear falcon, whatever the hell that was. Any earls in the vicinity could fly a peregrine, and priests were allowed sparrowhawks. Commoners were just allowed a stick to throw, if it wasn't a big stick. Magrat found herself wondering what Nanny Og would be allowed. A small chicken on a spring, probably. There was no specific falcon for a witch, but as a queen, the Lancre rules of falconry allowed her to fly the Wow Hawk or Lappet-faced Warrior. It was small and short-sighted and preferred to walk everywhere. It fainted at the sight of blood, and about 20 Wow Hawks could kill a pigeon if it was a sick pigeon. She'd spent an hour with one on her wrist. It had wheezed at her, and eventually it had dozed off upside down. But at least Hodges Arg had a job to do. The castle was full of people doing jobs. Everyone had something useful to do except Magrat. She just had to exist. Of course, everyone would talk to her, provided she talked to them first. But she was always interrupting something important. Apart from ensuring the royal succession, which Verence had sent off for a book about, she...
"You just keep back there, girl. You don't want to come no further," said a voice.
Magrat bridled.
"Girl, one happens to be very nearly of the royal blood by marriage."
"Maybe, but the bees don't know that," said the voice.
Magrat stopped. She'd stepped out beyond what were the gardens from the point of view of the royal family, and into what were the gardens from the point of view of everyone else, beyond the world of hedges and topiary and herb gardens, and into the world of old sheds, piles of flower pots, compost, and just here, beehives. One of the hives had the lid off. Beside it, in the middle of a brown cloud, smoking his special bee pipe, was Mr. Brooks.
"Oh," she said, "it's you, Mr. Brooks."
Technically, Mr. Brooks was the royal beekeeper, but the relationship was a careful one. For one thing, although most of the staff were called by their last name, Mr. Brooks shared with the cook and the butler the privilege of an honorific. Besides, Mr. Brooks had secret powers. He knew all about honey flows and the mating of queens. He knew about swarms and how to destroy wasps' nests. He got the general respect shown to those like witches and blacksmiths, whose responsibilities are not entirely to the world of the humdrum and everyday, people who in fact know things that others don't about things that others can't fathom. And he was generally found doing something fiddly with the hives, ambling across the kingdom in pursuit of a swarm, or smoking his pipe in his secret shed which smelt of old honey and wasp poison. You didn't offend Mr. Brooks. Not unless you wanted swarms in your privy while he sat cackling in his shed. He carefully replaced the lid on the hive and walked away. A few bees escaped from the gaping holes in his beekeeping veil.
"Afternoon, your ladyship," he conceded.
"Hello, Mr. Brooks. What have you been doing?"
Mr. Brooks opened the door of his secret shed and rummaged about inside.
"They're late swarming," said the beekeeper. "I was just checking up on them. Fancy a cup of tea, girl?"
You couldn't stand on ceremony with Mr. Brooks. He treated everyone as an equal, or more often as a slight inferior. It probably came of ruling thousands every day. And at least she could talk to him. Mr. Brooks had always seemed to her as close to a witch as it was possible to be while still being male. The shed was stuffed full of bits of hive, mysterious torture instruments for extracting honey, old jars, and a small stove on which a grubby teapot steamed next to a huge saucepan. He took her silence for acceptance.